on the air. Ziela Eisenstein is one of the foremost political theorists, activists, and social feminists of our time. In addition to being a political theorist and activist, she is emerita professor of political science at the Ithaca College, where she has taught for over 25 years. Throughout her career, her books have tracked the rise of neoliberalism both within the U.S. and across the globe. Among her many important books are Capitalist Patriarchy and the Case for Socialist Feminism, Against Empire, and The Color of Gender, Reimagining Democracy. Welcome, Ziela Eisenstein.
Oh, well, thank you.
So I hope you're okay with going back to that time in 1979 when you edited the book Capitalist Patriarchy and the Case for Socialist Feminism, because that was one of the earliest statements of how a Marxist class analysis can combine with a feminist analysis of patriarchy to produce a theory of gender and class as intersecting systems of inequality. And I think many people nowadays on the left and even in the academy may know a little bit about Marx, but they don't really understand that Marxism and really didn't take into account women's unpaid labor. And they may also not really have some understanding of feminism, especially feminism and its history and its nuances. So I'm wondering if you could take us back to that time when socialist feminists were exploring that relationship and break it down for our listeners and explain, what did Marx leave out and what did other socialist feminists like yourself think need to be added to understand the relationship between patriarchy and capitalism?
Okay, so, you know, it's always hard to think backwards, you know, to the extent that you have all these decades in between that have you looking at it probably somewhat differently. But I can remember just the passion in which some of us were caught between our commitments to feminism and commitments to Marxism, and how it seemed very difficult to blend the two, and find a way to radicalize feminism with Marxism and to make Marxism more insurgent with an understanding of the sexual hierarchy of the economy at that time. So it also was a period where there was a very active women's movement, the mainstream part of it, predominantly white and predominantly liberal. And liberal here really meaning pro-capitalist, and the belief that opportunity and giving women equality of opportunity was really what feminism was about. So that was kind of the dominant discourse. And for me, I mean, I was brought up in a communist household. I knew Marxism before I knew feminism, either intellectually or politically. So my particular route there was somewhat different than many of the women who were Marxist feminists, but they came to it more through the mainstream women's movement, and then the need to radicalize that further. Okay, so, I mean, I do think the context of that moment, you know, is important, but then we also want to get to the actual you know, interventions that we made. But it was really interesting to me that, again, it was a period where mainstream feminism, led by somebody like Bella Abzug, who, you know, was in Congress, etc., Jimmy Carter was the president, there was this whole discussion about what is it that women want, and there actually was a national convention organized by the liberal feminists in government and Jimmy Carter. And I was actually asked to attend that meeting to say what I thought, what do women want? And my response was, well, I'm not the right person because I talk to Marxists about why they should be feminists, but I don't know how to talk to liberal feminists about why they should be socialists. Long story short, I did finally, with pressure from many of the Marxist feminists that I work with, I did decide that I would go, and actually make that argument as to when you say you want equality with men, which men do you mean? Do you mean rich men, middle-class men, working-class men? Do you mean black men? I mean, so what we need is more than just this idea that you want to be treated the same as whom, you know? And so that was really the beginning of a lot of the work that we then started doing about trying to use the structure of patriarchy and capitalism and really talk about it as capitalist patriarchy. And in the book that you mentioned that you read by me, I do remember waking up in the middle of the night thinking to myself, I have it wrong. I'm calling it patriarchal capitalism, and it's not. It's capitalist patriarchy. And that was like a real move for me to really argue that the system of patriarchy predates capitalism, and capitalism is the particular economic modality that we're experiencing, but patriarchy was alive and well in feudalism. You know, and of course, actually, Marx wasn't all that good in terms of his texts about really understanding what that relationship was. So in terms of Marx's writings, it is interesting, like in the German ideology, he says there are two divisions of labor. There's the sexual division of labor, and which arises from the sex act. That's a direct quote from his writing. And then there is the division of labor that derives from private property and profit. But then, before he finishes, he says that the dominant division of labor is the division of labor arising from private property. So what happens is that he himself understood there was a sexual division of labor, but erases it himself in terms of the prioritization of class struggle and the class domination. So the work that I did initially was really trying to argue and even find the language to argue that these systems, they were not dual, they were not separate, they were mutually dependent, they were relatively autonomous. I was trying to find words that made it really complex. And actually, I did not use the term intersectional, you know, because at that time, that just seemed to me, I mean, that was before Kim Crenshaw developed her construct of it. But for me, I was looking for words that didn't sound linear, you know, like an intersection, as though it was precise. I was really trying to say that these systems are enormously messy, and to understand how they depend on each other is just a constant historical contextual process. So,
and do you feel, Zila, that the issue around that unhappy marriage between Marxist feminists and radical feminists, or answering that question that book was attempting to answer, we've moved beyond that now? Or where do you think we are now in terms of that discussion of how does patriarchy and capitalism intersect and interrelate?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's so interesting, that idea of move beyond. We're definitely not where we were, and we're definitely, you know, someplace else. I mean, in this very particular moment, I just think it's fascinating to ask these questions, because there is a new popularization of the term socialism. I mean, I've lived long enough to see it go completely out of phase, and there was a period where I even wrote a piece and said I no longer am identifying as socialist feminist, because it takes too much time to try to defend it. Instead, I will just say what I believe without that label, you know. And And then, you know, about 5 years later, I changed my mind again. But it is interesting in this particular moment where there are, you know, enough people in mainstream politics who are popularizing the term. I know that there is not agreement about what it means, and a whole lot of socialists are not Marxist. So, but if you ask me politically, does that matter? I don't know if it does. I think what really matters is what you can cohere together on in terms of policies for social change, saving the climate, dealing with white supremacy, and the way that these problems are imbricated in the profit-making system of capitalism, that I do think that there are more and more young people, and really intergenerationally, who do see that these are issues that are connected and therefore have to be dealt with in some kind of simultaneous or intersectional way, you know, in this moment. And weirdly enough, I think that Trump has his radical exposure of the relationship between white supremacy and capitalism and misogyny has actually created the possibility of a radical understanding of why they have to be addressed in their complexity, you know, that they are not singular systems.
Right. And I think, as we noticed with Bernie Sanders, who's a democratic socialist, not a socialist, but even so, he got criticized for his lack of understanding and of race and gender. And I am wondering, where do you see socialist feminism today in the U.S., given how theoretically Marxism has been so discredited, although it seems more widely accepted that neoliberal capitalism is not the answer?
Yeah. Well, so I really do think that things are in process right now that are really quite extraordinary. And I think it is impossible to know how things will emerge, let's say, even in the next 2 years towards the next presidential election. Not to limit us to this idea of electoral politics as the only political sphere, but given the president at the moment and the need to get rid of him, it seems to me that that is a partial priority. You know, of course, Bernie Sanders just came out with his candidacy, and just yesterday I sent in a piece I was asked to write for the State of Nature blog, should the left unite behind Bernie Sanders? And I said, no. That, first of all, I don't know who the left is. For me, I think there is a really burgeoning socialist, feminist possibility at the moment, and that I really think that we should see how this emerges. I think that if Bernie Sanders is committed to this issue of socialism, etc., that he should use his clout to support the most progressive woman candidate who will be running, and that we also need to mobilize real radical initiatives to press toward the most devastating issues that are facing us at the moment in terms of the economy and our carceral system and, of course, the environment as maybe number one. I care less about exactly what you think socialism is, but if you know that a system based on profit-making is too destructive and has become way too excessive and punishing, and that you're willing to really try to develop a different economic system that will be based in a very different racial construct as well as a gender possibility, I would embrace you as a potential socialist feminist. This idea that there is a perfect way to be a socialist, that doesn't exist today. I don't know if it ever did. And if you look at the history of struggles, they emerge out of the particular moments that fire them and ignite them. I don't know about you, but I feel as though there is, right alongside the horrors that exist, is this incredible potential, you know, just blow it up and move it towards a more humane system. because too many people are suffering.
Is there any particular socialist feminists or movements that are exciting you? Is the DSA or anybody in particular?
Well, I think DSA has done some really exciting things. I wasn't a fan at certain points. I think in the last period of time, last couple of years, they've done some incredible work. I think that a lot of the teachers' union movements right now are really quite amazing. I'm a part of the International Women's Strike, the U.S. Coordinating Committee, and you know, we are very committed to trying to create camaraderie across the globe over the enormous issues of sexual violence. And I do think that for me, in terms of the kind of new material analysis I've been doing, historical, it is to say that sexual violence is the glue of capitalism. It holds it together. It silences people. It creates the difficulty of really standing against. We saw that with the Me Too movements, earlier ones with Tarana Burke and the more recent ones. But sexual violation of all different arenas and orders, you know, whether we're talking about the Catholic Church or we're talking about the workplace or we're talking about our prisons, what else would be so universal and endemic and not politically theorized? So then 1 Billion Rising, which is, it's all over the globe. There are just hundreds of countries that are organized. 1 Billion Rising is the 1 billion women who have been sexually violated on the globe. And it is an anti-violence mobilization that really organizes people in extraordinary ways. Eve Ensler is one of the originators of that movement. It's about 5 years old now, I think. I really see Rock United, the restaurant workers led by Saru. I mean, there are a lot of different locations of real serious political work and thousands of resistance groups that exist in the United States right now, whether and how we can bring them together and mobilize them for a real taking over and on the present government and then radicalizing it further. I mean, that to me is my commitment. I do think that in the work that I've done with Angela Davis, I have come to really accept the term abolitionist, this idea that you can reform the system of white supremacy. You cannot sufficiently reform it, and so it must be abolished. So, but do I believe that you can use reforms to move towards revolution and abolition? Yeah, I don't see those as either or offerings, reform or revolution. I think actually that a lot of work in reformist activities, if you also have a commitment to revolution, that they really are very, very intimate with each other and connected.
Well, I appreciate that you mentioned IWS. Maybe we could just end with you talking a little bit about that, because we are trying to organize that here too. So what about IWS do you see as a important movement that's intersectional?
IWS is the commitment that women workers, in the sense of women working wherever their labor operates. So 2 years ago, we organized actions, but not just strikes, because strikes are where women who are doing paid labor and have jobs, that's where that happens, but that the idea that women are doing daily labor and consumer labor and domestic labor and caregiving labor, that there are all of these realms that, again, do not get recognized in a traditional Marxist critique of capitalism. And there is an embrace by the International Women's Strike to see women at whatever site they are located in, coming together and creating a work stoppage, but that in the most creative sense of what we're talking about as work. It's not paid jobs necessarily. It could be all of the layers of social labor that is done disproportionately, you know, by women. You know, International Women's Labor Day, March 8th. But in Argentina and in Poland, I mean, the levels of organizing in relationship to against sexual violence, that you've had millions of women in the streets. We in the United States have really not been anywhere near as mobilized as other countries, right, you know, in the last year, for sure, and not on March 8th as well. We're not an activist country compared right. to women elsewhere. You know, it's a really interesting question.
So just to end here, Zila, you are hopeful for the future.
I am. How can you not be? But mine, it's not an empty hopefulness. I may be wrong, but I really do believe that some of the increase exposure and almost transparency about conflict and punishment and pain right now, that it is a real site of hopeful possibility, as strange as that sounds.
That was an interview with socialist feminist Zila Eisenstein. And